Your basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
All right, it is the don't panic just yet version of Bucks Weekly. We're here until 9 o'clock tonight. Wide open hour. Plenty of time to hear from you on tonight's show. 855-616-1620 is that number to reach us tonight on Bucks Weekly. We didn't have a chance to catch up after the Christmas Day game against the Boston Celtics. Not that that's a bad thing. But we lost out on that hour of communication between myself and the rest of you guys. So tonight, the hour is wide open. Put out a, APB on your concerns for the Bucks on Twitter. Got a few questions already trickling in. We will address those throughout the show. And I talked about this a little bit with Brian. Had quite the day today to just catch up with some old friends. Met one in person for the first time. I've conversed with her several times. You've heard her on this on these airwaves, on Bucks Talk with us earlier in the season. But the first chance to actually meet Camille Davis, in person earlier today as a handful of us on Bucks Twitter and the podcasting world came together and broke bread at a local pizza chain that our good friend is a big fan of. So we'll get to that. But look, 1-3 start to this road trip with just one game left. It's very hard to call a game in Chicago against the Bulls part of your road trip because the travel portion is done for the Bucks. They're back home, came back last night or came back Sunday night. After the Christmas Day matchup with the Boston Celtics, they're going to bus to Chicago for the game. They're going to come back afterwards, get to sleep in their bed Sunday night, last night, tonight, tomorrow night. So for all intents and purposes, the road trip is over. And 1-3 is not where you expect it to be, especially after that big win to open it up in New Orleans a little over a week ago. Feels like a lifetime ago that Joe Ingles stepped on the court for the first time this season. First time in a Bucks uniform. You beat the New Orleans Pelicans, who at the time were right there neck and neck for the Memphis Grizzlies for best record in the Western Conference. And you started to think, okay, here we go. You get Joe Ingles back. We're still waiting on Chris Middleton. We're going to get to Chris Middleton in just a minute. But you get Joe Ingles back. You get a big win. It's going to be difficult in Cleveland against the Cavs and Brooklyn against the Nets. And I told you, Nets are not a bad team. They've been playing really well. At this point, we got to take them seriously based on what we've seen for the last, 3 weeks. And that continued Friday night. But everything was pointing towards Christmas Day in Boston with the Celtics. You played Boston last year. In terms of finishes, it was one of the best finishes to a game in the regular season that the Bucks had a season ago. And you thought, okay, it's Christmas Day. Giannis always puts up big games on Christmas Day. Giannis wasn't the problem on Christmas Day this year. But everything was pointed to that. And along the way, you played very poorly, if we're being frank, for about 2.5-3 quarters in Cleveland. You got off to a very, very sluggish and slow start against the Nets. You had one very, very brief charge in that game. And then the same thing against the Celtics. These slow starts and these turnovers have been the issue for the Bucks in these recent struggles. I'm not panicking, and I'm not worried. I've seen a lot of consternation out there on Twitter. I've seen a lot of panic. I've seen if we're being honest, I've seen a lot of ridiculous pondering of trades. It's December. This team is still not fully healthy. And let's get this out of the way. Chris Middleton is ruled out for tomorrow's game in Chicago against the Bulls. So we went from Chris is back to Chris is back on the injured list and out, and then all of a sudden upgraded from out to doubtful. And there was growing optimism. We heard from Coach Mike Budenholzer. We're optimistic he's going to be back on the floor for us towards the end of the road trip. That didn't happen. And I understand how it's going to be easy to say, well, he's coming off of two surgeries. I don't know. I'm starting to get worried. I can connect the dots and understand why the corners of the dark web that are really, really concerned are coming to these conclusions. But I'm not there yet. And let's keep in mind, it's going to be a process for this team. Very similar to what we saw a season ago. All the injuries that you dealt with early in the season. You lost Brook Lopez, game number two. Christmas Day, we mentioned that. Well, what we didn't mention was the week preceding that Christmas Day game, Giannis was in health and safety protocols and had COVID. The Christmas Day matchup was the first game back for Giannis. And if we rewind the calendar 12 months ago, not just Giannis, the league as a whole had a pretty big issue with COVID this time last year. Think about all the star power that was missing from those Christmas Day games. Injuries and players in health and safety protocols. But Brook Lopez goes down. Giannis was in and out of the lineup. Bobby Portis had the same. Drew Holiday had the same. Chris Middleton had the same. Injuries was the theme of the first three-plus months of the season for the Bucks a year ago. And we saw, slowly but surely, down the stretch, they started to figure things out. You get Brook Lopez back. The defense goes from, holy cow, this defense is borderline bad, to pretty good and centered on right around league average once they got Brook Lopez back in the mix. So they got better as time went on. This year, we thought we skipped all that. Brook Lopez was back. He got to game number two, and you saw, okay, I'm going to cross my fingers here and hope that Brook Lopez isn't once again on the injury report, mysteriously is out in game number two. He wasn't. And Brook Lopez, we'll get to this a little bit later, Brook Lopez has clearly been the second-best player on the Bucks. Whether or not that's a problem is another discussion, but Brook Lopez has been your second-best player. We thought this year would be different. It hasn't. Those injuries are still there. And let's keep in mind, this is an older team. This is a veteran team. You're going to have to do things like take it easy and be very, very cautious with rest and health with a group that's at the age most of these Bucks are at. Yes, Giannis is in the prime of his career. Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton both in their low 30s. Brook Lopez in his mid-30s. George Hill, a veteran player. It's an older team, so you're going to have to be extra cautious and take things slow with this group, and I think that's part of what we're seeing. The first month of the season was very important, and I think what we've seen so far leads me to believe they recognize that as well. The schedule was not difficult. I think by the numbers, the Bucks had the easiest schedule in the league. And on this show, on Bucks Talk, on Bucks Shoot Around, it talked about it over and over and over. You got to bank wins. You got to bank wins because you're relatively healthy. You didn't have Pat or Chris, but you got Giannis on the floor. You got Drew Holiday on the floor. You should beat teams like the Houston Rockets. You got to bank these wins because the schedule is going to get more difficult. And yes, we assume you're going to get healthier. But you got a lot of home games and you got a lot of bad teams on the schedule. So pick up these wins now so you can buy yourself the opportunity to deal with some setbacks and struggles. And I think that's what we've seen. This team is still not fully healthy. It's still a work in progress with Joe Ingles. And we have seen some good things from Joe Ingles in his limited run so far with the team. But it's going to take some time for Joe Ingles to learn the tendencies of Giannis, of Drew Holiday. You haven't had him on the floor with Chris Middleton yet. And the rest of his teammates. All of this is going to be a process. So winning those games early in the season and starting 9-0 and doing what the Bucks did to sprint out to that has been very important because struggles are going to come. And that's what the Bucks are going through. right now. Now, I did mention, I'm not worried. I am not panicked. It seems like that may be in the minority right now. But there's a couple of reasons why I am not panicked. I will share those and a couple of questions that came in on Twitter. If you have any, you can tweet at me as well. It's at TMJ Garcia. Or call in and ask your question. 855-616-1620. Some of the questions that are out there, a couple of good ones. We'll get to that after this on Bucks Weekly. All right, a lot of questions coming in about trades. I will get to that in a moment because there's one very, very popular name out there. And I'll just say this. With the people I've gotten to know in NBA media and reporting, it does sound as though I think in the next week to 2 weeks, there's a very good chance we'll see Jay Crowder moved from the Phoenix Suns to whether it's a three-way deal, whatever it is. It does not mean it's the Bucks, but I think we're approaching about the 1 to 2 week warning before Jay Crowder finally gets moved. But that's the name that's come up the most. Hey, what do you think about acquiring Jay Crowder? What do the Bucks have to give up to bring in a Jay Crowder? And let's just get to this, okay? We've had this conversation many times, but it's worth repeating. The NBA is unique compared to the NFL and certainly compared to Major League Baseball, where you can just, hey, we'll package all these young guys. We'll give you a player to be named later. And we'll take this really good guy off your hands for this lottery ticket, right? You can't do that in the NBA. You have to fall under the constraints of the salary cap. And that's why I've said this before many times. The trade machine that ESPN.com has, Tommy, you look like a big trade machine guy. I can see you going home at night and just plugging away.
Whoa.
How do we get rid of this guy? And how do we bring in this guy?
That seems like a harsh statement.
No, it's just an observation. Tell me I'm wrong.
I've never been on the trade machine.
Never been on the trade machine.
Okay, I like the trade machine.
The trade machine is the worst thing that's been invented because it will tell you, hey, yeah, this trade works. What it doesn't tell you, it's like playing a video game. It's like, hey, I traded for this guy. Like, why in the world would the Chicago Bulls make that trade? That's what the trade machine is. Like, great, yes, under the salary cap, those contracts line up. You can make the deal, but explain to me why both these teams would sign off on this deal.
Does not account for logic.
No, there is no AI in the trade machine. So you have to fall under the constraints of the salary cap. And here's the issue that the Bucks are going to continue to run into. John Horst has done some magic with second-round picks in the past. But I think we've started to see second-round picks, I think, lose value is a little bit strong, but they don't carry quite as much as they used to. I mean, Nikola Mirotic, granted it didn't work out, but nobody thought the Bucks could acquire Niko Mirotic for what it cost them. He was a name that you kept pointing to. Man, wouldn't it be great to add Niko Mirotic to the mix? It's everything that we've said the Bucks needed. You didn't think you could get him for 4 second-round picks. The P.J. Tucker trade was somewhat similar as well. That included sending out contracts that were bad and turning, basically cheating, and turning the second-rounder into a first-rounder and including that in the deal. You didn't think you had those. John Horst has made a habit of making these moves when you think, man, how did he do that? But I think we've seen a little bit of a drop in what second-round picks will net you now. And that's all the Bucks have. Can't trade a first-round pick until 2029. This year's first-rounder goes to the Houston Rockets. That was that P.J. Tucker trade where you lifted some of the protections and turned it into a first-rounder. This year's pick goes to Houston. Next year's first-round pick can be swapped. If you finish with a worse record than the New Orleans Pelicans, they trade you picks. Like, hey, you can take our pick at 27, and we're taking your pick at 19. The 2025 first-round pick is also gone. The 2026 first-round pick, another pick swap with the Pelicans. In 2027, another trade to the Pelicans as part of that Drew Holiday package. So you can't trade the 2028 first-round pick because you can't move first-round picks in consecutive years. It's one of the Stepien rules is what it's referred to, the league's way of policing dumb general managers from themselves and saying, look, we're going to protect you from it. It's like a golf cart.
Thank you, Brooklyn Nets.
Well, yes. It's like a golf cart where it's, let's make sure these can't go more than 10 miles an hour. That's what the league did with these first-round picks. So you can't move your first-rounder until 2029. You just have second-rounders to move. So humor me here, Tommy. And now that we go through this whole charade, something's going to end up happening to just throw all of this in my face and, hey, but you said this couldn't happen. But you can't move a first-rounder until 2029. You have very, very, very limited contracts that are going to match up with the exact type of player everybody is talking about. And for this example, since the name refuses to go away, let's just use Jay Crowder. So everybody wants to know, how can you get Jay Crowder? Jay Crowder wants out. Boy, wouldn't it be great to bring the Marquette product back home? Seeing Jay Crowder have some big games against us. Granted, it seems like all of those were in the bubble. Not so much in the finals a couple of years ago, but nonetheless. Jay Crowder right now is under contract, his final year of contract with the Phoenix Suns, for about $10.1 million. So, the way the salary cap works in the NBA, I almost said salary crap, because sometimes it feels like that, but the way the salary cap works in the NBA, a $10.1 million is what Jay Crowder is making. So, you can make a deal to bring back 125% of what you trade out. So the Phoenix Suns could move Jay Crowder and bring back a $12.6 million contract. The Bucks could trade for Jay Crowder, but they would have to give up, about a $9 million contract or $9 million or so in contracts. 8.5, something like that. So let's just look at the Bucks roster. Who do you have that's in that contract range? Well, you're not trading Joe Ingles, right? Your prized offseason acquisition. And I think you've started to see a nice step forward for Joe Ingles on Christmas Day against the Celtics. But you're not trading Joe Ingles at $6.4 million. You're not trading Pat Connaughton, who is an absolute bargain at $5.7 million. And that deal goes up the next couple of years to about $9.5 million. George Hill's making $4 million. I am still in the I will believe George Hill has moved from this team when I see it actually happen. And we had a couple of questions about George Hill I'll get to in a moment. You got Jordan Juarez making $3 million. I have to assume you're not moving Marjon Beauchamp. Javon Carter's making just over $2 million. Thanasis, Wesley Matthews, and Serge Ibaka are all on the veterans minimum at about $1.8 million. So you see everybody say, well, just move George Hill and make a package around George Hill, Jordan Wara, and Serge Ibaka. That would add up to about $8.8 million, which would bring you back a contract in the $10 million range. But again, the AI theory. You're an opposing team, and you have this asset that we've deemed to be pretty good. And I tell you, okay, what if I give you a backup center who's on a veteran's minimum? This may be his final year. Who knows? I give you Jordan Wara, who we've seen can score. Problems don't lie on that side of the floor. It's on the other end of the floor. And who knows what the ceiling is there. And I give you George Hill, who's in the same boat as Serge Ibaka. maybe this is it. Maybe this is the final year of George Hill. But also, we've seen George Hill play in the playoffs, and we've seen he has the trust of the coaching staff. Regardless, let's say you've decided, here's the package we're going to offer. Why do you say yes to that trade?
Yeah, you can't.
Oh, we can throw in a bunch of second-round picks. Okay. Wait, what else you got? 2029 first-rounder. Now, here's the thing. That 2029 first-round pick, obviously Giannis is not under contract when that year comes up, but that's a long way to wait. So that would carry some value, but that is a long time to wait. Other teams can come in and say, look, we can give you a first-round pick this year. We can give you a first-round pick in 2 years. We can give you multiple first-round picks. That's the difficulty that the Bucks have found themselves in. And what really paints them in a corner is the one guy that you could say, okay, in terms of a contract, this will match up. And it's not just Jay Crowder. Any guy you look at and say, boy, what do the Bucks need? Well, they need wings. Number one, every single team in the league is looking to acquire wings going into the trade deadline. What do the Cavaliers need? They need a wing. The Brooklyn Nets might be the only team that's... The Nets and the Celtics are really the only teams of like, yeah, wing isn't necessarily our number one need. The Phoenix Suns are looking for a wing to replace Jay Crowder. It's not unique to the Bucks, so that's the other struggle they have. Everybody needs wings, right? But the problem that the Bucks have is here's a contract that would work, not Jay Crowder specific, not dependent on Jay Crowder. This Grayson Allen thing, anybody we look at that position is going to be making $10-plus million. So that's what we're going to need. But, oh, by the way, we still kind of need Grayson Allen. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight. Your level of concern, the questions that you have, is we're a little past the quarter point of this NBA season. We're a little more than a third of the way through the season here. So that's what the Bucks are facing. That's the difficulty that they're facing in terms of the trade market. But I did ask on Twitter, what are the questions that you have? What are your concerns following this 1-3 start to the road trip? We got a few of them. A few have centered around a couple of the names you've already mentioned. We'll tackle those questions. And I see your eyebrow raised, Tommy. We'll see what your level of concern is as well, because you've been here with me for most of these losses recently on Bucks Talk. We will tackle what to not be concerned about and some of the questions you asked earlier. We'll get to that after this on Bucks Talk. All right, there's a couple of interesting scores around the league. We will get to the questions that some of you asked earlier, but it looked rather interesting about 15 minutes ago in Boston. The Celtics and the Rockets in a tight one. That was until the final few minutes of the third quarter and the start to the fourth quarter, where the Celtics have now blown it open. And to lead the Rockets by 21 with just a couple of minutes left. But the Atlanta Hawks are down big once again, losing to everybody's darlings, the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks are up at halftime in a revenge game for Jalen Brunson against the Dallas Mavericks. The Phoenix Suns lost a close one on Christmas Day, are blowing out the Memphis Grizzlies, who were absolutely embarrassed and destroyed by the Golden State Warriors on Christmas Day. And the Toronto Raptors are down double figures to the Los Angeles Clippers. So some interesting scores going on in the association tonight. And again, the Bucks and the Chicago Bulls tomorrow. No Chris Middleton once again in that game, and Drew Holiday on the injury report, but listed as probable. I get the impression, and I know we've kind of gone through this a couple of times now. We've been in this dance for a while, but you do get the feeling that Chris is, I'm not going to say likely to play because it's been weeks now, but you kind of feel like there's a really good chance he's going to play Friday against the Timberwolves, but we're close. It's way too early to panic, and I've seen way too much of, well, now you really are at a crossroads, and you got to start to consider, do you move on from Chris? I thought we were done with this. I really did. I thought this conversation died in July of 2021.
Yeah, when he won us a championship.
When he won us a championship, when he helped close out the Atlanta Hawks in Giannis's shadow, when he had a 40-point game in the NBA Finals, when he hit the game-winning shot against the Brooklyn Nets to close out the Bucks' first ever Game 7 win on the road, I really thought we were done with this. It's very disappointing. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed in all of you that continue to drag Chris Middleton's name through. Oh, well, I think the Bucks need to consider their options. You don't. And whatever you sign him for, hopefully you agree to an extension, whatever it is, he's worth it. But a couple of questions came in about George Hill. Why isn't George Hill playing recently? It's a good question. Now, it's four straight games that George Hill has been a DNP. He's not been on the injury report in those four games. I have been an advocate all season long for George Hill and Wesley Matthews specifically of, you know, I think their value is clearly going to be in the postseason. Like, you need these guys to help, and you need the depth to help you get through the regular season, but these are guys, and especially George, what we've seen from him, West, depending on the matchup that you have, you just need them to be healthy for the playoffs. So I've been a strong advocate for, you know, let Marjon Beauchamp play. Earlier in the season, I was labeled the Jordan Wara guy, even though it was just, hey, I think he's improving here. I'm not trying to say he's better than Marjon Beauchamp, but I've seen some improvement. Let him play, even, and save these guys. Say, okay, George is going to play one out of every four or five games. I think what we've seen from George Hill with the DNP coach's decision the last four games and not on the injury report, I think it's partially that. And also, it's the same conversation we've had when talking about all of the positives you're seeing from Marjon Beauchamp. The good news is that of, hey, he's continuing to grow. The bad news is we've got a lot of guys that play the same position as Marjon Beauchamp. And George Hill, maybe you look at him and say, well, George Hill's a two guard or a backup point guard, so we don't have a lot of that. But George Hill's a wing guy. And George Hill's a guy that's really a one through three, the way that the Bucks have utilized him. And his minutes have evaporated since Joe Ingles made his debut. And you're going to continue to see that. When Chris is back, where do the minutes come from? So to me, I'm not reading too much into George Hill not playing the last four games. I think it's, here's a chance to get him some rest. Let's play Joe and see what we got here. There's going to be stretches during the season where Joe Ingles is going to get a DNP. I would assume he's going to be in the injury report for rest, but there's going to be stretches of that. So I think this is just kind of, let's work in some rest from George. And also, there's only 48 minutes in a game. There's only so many to go around, and that's the spot that we have reached here with George Hill. So a couple of questions coming in about George Hill and why we haven't seen him lately, which is funny. Again, the way the season ended, where no one wanted George Hill around anymore, and now we've reached the point where it's, hey, why isn't George Hill playing? So funny how things change with everybody but Chris Middleton, apparently, with a segment of Bucks fans out there. A couple of other questions surrounding trades. We'll tackle those, and a few that have come out here as well. Maybe we'll have Tommy run them through the trade machine. We'll get to you the trade corner of the show after this on Bucks Weekly. It's still too early to panic. I'm not saying don't be concerned, because there are some things that need to be cleaned up that we've seen here. But to me, as we said at the top of the show, taking it beyond the 1-3 road trip so far, if really we've continued to circle that 10-game stretch on this schedule that started on the 9th in Dallas and goes all the way until tomorrow in Chicago, at best, the Bucks are going to finish 5-5. And I had somebody else ask me, for as much as we talk about this 10-game stretch, what are your expectations for this? And I thought from the start, I expect them to go 6-4. I hope they go 7-3. 8-2 would be great. Well, that's not going to happen. They're going to fall short of those expectations. To me, I'm not going to use the word disaster. 4-6 would not be good. But it is just tough to really gauge this team offensively with no Chris Middleton on the floor. They are still towards the bottom in offensive efficiency in the half court. And that's not going to improve until Chris Middleton comes back on the floor. Giannis has made some strides. Giannis was really good at the pull-up jumpers against the Celtics on Christmas Day. It's still not consistent. Chris is that guy that can get you a bucket in the half court. When you're late in the shot clock, when you need to create a shot, that's Chris Middleton territory. And this team basically has not had him all season long. That's a big reason why their half-court offense has been brutal and their offense overall has been in the bottom half of the league. At times, in the bottom third of the league this season. So it's really tough to form an opinion on what this team is until they get healthy. And that's the unfortunate part of 2 years in a row. We've dealt with this for a large chunk of the season. But the other thing, it's not just Chris related. The other thing to keep in mind is this. Because of Chris's absence, it's changed the role. And not Chris related, I should say, by just him not being on the floor. His absence has changed the role for a lot of these players. To me, the biggest changes are what we've seen from Bobby Portis and Grayson Allen. And what I mean by that is you have had to ask Grayson Allen to play a different role than he did a season ago. Remember the start to the season last year, Grayson Allen was basically just catch and shoot threes. And I actually talked about this with him earlier today, but our pal Eric Name asked Coach Budenholzer before, I believe it was the Nets game, either the Nets or the Celtics game, is Grayson taking enough shots? Like, do you need Grayson to shoot more? And his answer was, yes, we need him to shoot more. And joked, well, how do you get that from him? And Bud joked, well, I yell at him. But you need more shots from Grayson Allen. The problem is with no Chris Middleton, you need Grayson Allen to help facilitate and be a creator. And especially in those minutes that Drew Holiday has been off the floor. You've kind of had to say the same for Bobby Portis, where his role has changed as well. Very similar to Grayson a year ago, Bobby was the guy that was just shooting open threes, getting his guy in the post, and just relying on Bobby Portis to catch the ball and shoot the ball. He's had to change up his role this year as well because the offense has just not been in that flow, and it's because you got a big, big piece of it out. I mean, Bobby Portis so far this season and Grayson Allen this season, the volume of threes they're taking per game is down. For Grayson Allen, it's nearly two fewer threes per game he is attempting. He's shooting 40% on his threes, same as he was a year ago. He's just not taking as many. And it's because he's not taking as many shots. He's been asked to be a ball handler and a facilitator and not just the catch-and-shoot guy. That's going to change the offense for the worse. Bobby Portis, same thing. He's struggling to shoot the ball, but he's not taking as many shots, and his shooting percentage on three. A couple of years ago, Bobby Portis was near 50%. Last year, just under 40%. So far this season, through 33 games, Bobby Portis is shooting below 30% on threes. Because, again, it's not just open, clean looks that he's getting. So the absence of Chris Middleton is really the trigger for all of this. Now, there is some self-inflicted things as well. There's been way too many turnovers. And especially on this road trip, those turnovers have turned into points. You've got to cut down on that. And you've got to cut down on the live ball turnovers. Because those turnovers have been the self-inflicted part. It's been entry passes, lazy passes, bad passes. It's just led to fast break opportunities for the opponent. And that's why the Bucks continue to dig themselves into this hole and have to find their way out. So you've got to clean that up. But I really do think a part of it as well, the defense has taken a little bit of a slide. And it's only natural. That defense, we talked about them recognizing the importance of getting off to a fast start, banking some of these wins, because the schedule is going to get difficult and the schedule is going to shift to a road-heavy schedule, which it did in December. Both of those. You got to bank these wins. Well, they banked those wins with defense. Their defense was not good. Their defense was elite all the way until December. And as they started to introduce some pieces back offensively, it's only natural to loosen up a little bit and say, okay, we've got offensive help now. We can take our foot off the gas just a little bit. And I think that's what we've seen on the defensive side. So you got to get back to really dominating on the glass, playing much better defense, and As good as the three-point defense has been to start the season, it's regressed a little bit, especially on this road trip. You got to clean that up. But you just got to get Chris Middleton back. And as lazy as it sounds to point to that and say, look, same as the Celtics series ago, a season ago, things are different if Chris plays. It is a butterfly effect with this team. With no Chris Middleton on the floor, it changes a lot. Changes a lot for Bobby. It changes a lot for Grayson. It changes a lot for the offense and the defense. You just got to get healthy and start to get this group playing together. We'll wrap up the show and preview the border battle with the Bulls tomorrow night. We'll do that next on Bucks Weekly. Wrapping things up here on Bucks Weekly, it's the Bucks in Chicago tomorrow to take on the Bulls. Really in need of a win just to put an end to this three-game skid. We will preview that matchup in depth on Bucks Shootaround with yours truly tomorrow. You and me, Tommy, on Bucks Shootaround.
Yep.
6 o'clock is Bucks Shootaround. 6:30 is when our radio network coverage begins with me and Dave Kane. And as always, as soon as the game wraps up, it's once again me and Tommy tomorrow on Bucks Talk. The border battle between the Bulls and the Bucks. A couple of questions about the trade market. First of all, it's too early. Who should the Bucks target? Well, the Bucks need a wing, just like 80% of the NBA. They need another wing. Everyone does. It's like relief pitchers in baseball. What do you really need? Well, if you don't know what you need another arm, right? If you don't know what you need, even if you do know what you need, chances are it's another wing. Somebody that can defend shots or someone that can defend, period, and knock down shots. That's what the Bucks need. That's what everybody else needs. The Bulls are interesting because I really don't know which direction they're going in. And the Bulls have a handful of names that are very intriguing. Now, none of them are names that the Bucks are going to be able to attain. You wonder what they're going to do with Zach LaVine. And they are trending in the very, very worst of directions, are the Bulls. But you wonder what they're going to do with Zach LaVine. He's under contract for a couple more years, big-time money. DeMar DeRozan's another guy, $40 million next year, $43 million the year after that, $46 million the year after that. Nikola Vucevic, who you mortgaged your future for. He's on an expiring deal. I would have to assume they are going to be on the phones trying to find a home for him. But the one name on the Bulls that really, really intrigues me, coincidentally enough, in the same price range, as we said everyone is, in the same price range in terms of his contract as the aforementioned Jay Crowder, and I think he would look fantastic. I don't know if this is tampering since I get a check from the Bucks, so I probably shouldn't say he would. I wouldn't complain if Alex Caruso was on my team. I'll just say that. But it's still too early to say, well, this player, you should target this player, because there's going to continue to be a lot of movement. And even now in the standings, what we've seen in the Eastern Conference, look, I think what you have right now in 1 through 5, the order is going to flip-flop and change, but 1 through 5, those are going to be the top 5 teams in the East. The Celtics, the Bucks, the Cavs, the Nets, and the 76ers. What happens with the Knicks? What happens with the Hawks? What happens with the beloved Pacers? What do the Raptors do? Do they fall out of the picture? What do the Bulls do? Do they decide to just blow it up? Do the Wizards decide to do the same thing? Do the Magic, who I think we were the first program to say, look out for the Magic in the play-in tournament. Do the Magic sneak in there? Those are the questions in the playoffs, but 1 through 5 seems pretty determined, so we're not really going to have an answer on deals until you get closer to February. Again, Bucks Shootaround tomorrow at 6, and Bucks Talk immediately after the game. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 o'clock with Bucks Shootaround.